Support for Aspen Public Radio comes from Balcom & Green PC, a full-service law firm with offices in Glenwood Springs, Aspen, and Basalt, providing advice and solutions for their clients' legal needs throughout Western Colorado for more than 60 years. Learn more at balcomgreen.com.
Live from Aspen Public Radio, I'm Allison Bechtesh. This is Valley Roundup. This week, national monuments take a hit, a trail along the Crystal River becomes a dividing line, and an effort continues to turn private land into a public amenity. Also, how a federal tax overhaul would affect the Valley. All that and more coming up on Valley Roundup. Joining me today to put all of this in context and give their insights are Jason Auslander of the Aspen Times. Hi, Jason.
Hello.
Amy Haddon-Marsh of KDNK. Amy, do we have you on the line?
You do. Hi, Allison.
Amy, can you hear us on the line?
Yes. Can you not hear me? Hello.
We will try and check back in with Amy in just a moment. Also here in the studio is Bill Kite, a columnist with the Glenwood Post-Independent. Hi, Bill.
How are you doing?
Thanks so much for coming in today. All right, we'll try and reconnect with Amy, but Bill, I actually want to turn to you first. It's not necessarily local news, but it was a big announcement this week as the Trump administration said they would reduce federal land, these national monuments, Bears Ears in particular, and all of your work, 38 years with the Forest Service, specifically with looking into sacred ground and how to preserve and save that. I really want your take on that right up front here.
Well, you know, the tribes that worked on this proposal for the national monument, the Zuni tribe, the Navajo tribe, Ute Mountain Ute Indian tribe, and Ute Indian tribes, spent a long time working on this with Charles Wilkinson, a law professor from CU. And so it was very, very much input from the people who there should be input from. The native people who have over 100,000 sites there, that ancestral sites, a lot of which are sacred ground to them. And so I think the right decision was made to certainly make this a national monument, and there has to be strong reasons as to why that would be reduced, and I don't think there was a strong enough reason given for that.
I'm going to try Amy again. Amy, do we have you on the line?
Well, I'm right here.
Hi there. Can everyone
Hi.
Hear her?
Yes.
Including our listening audience. Wonderful.
Hi, Bill and Jason.
How you doing, Amy?
Hi, Amy.
Good. Good joining to hear us. Your voice, Mr. Kite.
Well, thank you.
Joining us from the studios in KDNK in Carbondale. Amy, also a lot of what you cover is public and this public lands. What was your reaction to the announcement this week?
My reaction was disbelief. I mean, I was really shocked. As Bill was saying, that 100,000 possibly sacred sites on Bears Ears, and it's now been cut down to an eighth of its size, I think somewhere around 200,000 acres. I mean, that to me is just shocking. I'm sorry. It just is. Maybe reporters aren't supposed to say that. But, you know, the other thing that I think is really bizarre is that I've read that Secretary of the Interior Zinke wants to, even though he's in favor of shrinking these other monuments, he wants to set aside some land in the Badger Two Medicine area in Montana because of Blackfeet sacred sites.
Well, the interesting thing about Mr. Zinke is he said that the tribes were happy with his review of the national monuments, and one of the Navajo representatives, Davis Filford, said, "I haven't been happy with him since day one, and I don't know what that word happy is." So I thought that was pretty funny. You have to know the Navajo to get a lot of humor out of that, but certainly it was meant to be very serious. Mm-hmm. And so to say that the review was done and they're happy with it was certainly not the truth.
Let's hit on that. What public comment was or wasn't taken and was or wasn't listened to? It kind of sounded like the line is that we didn't hear much public comment.
Well, the thing is, when he did the review, he only met with and toured with the Utah representatives, who from the governor of the representatives, All the Utah politicians have been against this from the start. And if you just read the proclamation, which amazingly enough is still online, it's one of the best written proclamations I've ever read. It really puts everything succinctly into perspective. But I guess that doesn't really matter to some people today who want to reduce the acreage.
Well, and I think Escalante is bears some mention here too. I was just there in the fall, right on the edge of it. I backpacked in Buckskin Gulch, which is a 20-mile long slot canyon. It's just unbelievable, beautiful. And I've spent a lot of time in Escalante, and that is, you know, equally as sad.
And right, let's talk about that a little more. What are we losing here? I mean, is it that big of a deal that all these acres that weren't really being used for much anyway now can, like, is it good that now they can be used for profiting America?
Well, I don't know that that's going to happen. There's some suits now that it's going to probably take years to resolve. I hope it does, because that gives time to really look at this from everyone's perspective. But I've been all over that area. I fought fire there. I've hiked in that area, and it's spectacular. But the reason the Antiquities Act was written in 1906 is to preserve sites of historic and prehistoric value, and certainly that qualifies for there are just so many sites. The interesting thing was yesterday there was a National Review article by the Utah Congressman Rob, what's his last name?
Bishop,
who introduced at one time a bill that was going to sell national lands, and he backed off of that one really quick. But he talked about the people that have been there have taken care of that land for generations, and the truth is there's vandalism that goes on and has been going on there for years of people thinking that that's their land, digging up the artifacts and relics, and it's a crime. It really is.
Well, and I don't think that, Allison, you said that nothing was going on in that land, and Bill and I were just talking. And when I was in Escalante, not this last fall, but a couple years ago, we were in one of the towns right on the edge of it, and it was booming. You know, this is, you can, if the bottom line here is to make money off it, which in Utah apparently it is, then, you know, that's happening. You know,
Tourists who are coming through are helping.
I would guess. Yeah. I mean, I would guess that those people that are serving those tourists, you know, are, you know, making money, maybe not as much as the oil companies.
Well, I don't know. $45 million is a lot of money. That's the last figure I saw that was made off.
It's true. But also, Utah has this massive campaign going on where they're trumpeting all these beautiful parks in the southern part of the state.
An embarrassment of national monuments.
You were going to say something, Amy?
Oh, I was just, you know, when you say nothing was going on, I think, my gosh, everything is going on that land that's been set aside. You know, it's wilderness. It's just being land. The animals are out there, and the sun rises and sets, and the air blows through. I mean, to me, that's everything, even if there are human beings aren't, you know, using the land.
Right. And they are using the land. They're camping on it. They're walking through it. They're, you know, enjoying it.
They're doing, the tribes are doing ceremonies there. That's sacred land, and that means that there's a lot of ritual and ceremonies that go on there, from traditional plant gathering to firewood to ceremonial purposes and all kinds of things that aren't seen. And the amazing thing about the proclamation that President Obama was written actually by Charles Wilkinson, but that he signed, mentioned that none of the uses, traditional uses, none of the uses of ranching, grazing, or anything else would be affected. And so there's some false information going on around that rights are being taken away, because access that's there now and all the uses that have occurred historically were intact in that proclamation.
Is there grazing on Bears Ears?
Right, there is.
There is?
Yeah.
Of the land that we're discussing that will no longer be protected in this manner, are some of those sacred native sites?
Well, you know, you don't find them all, and certainly when you find them, if you have a reputation as an archaeologist or a land manager, you're not going to reveal where those are when you're taken there to show them to protect. So there's so many sites that aren't discovered in that area that the 100,000 site figure is really a low figure to start with. So there are sites everywhere in that country.
All right, I want to move on to other news, hitting closer, though still dealing with this protection of the wild versus the use of the wild. Really, Jason, your story this week about Wilderness Workshop campaigning, it seemed pretty hard against a trail from Carbondale over the pass there.
To Crested Butte.
To Crested Butte.
Yeah.
And we're kind of like, are we environmentalists against environmentalists in this discussion?
Well, yeah. And actually, the chairman of the Board of County Commissioners, Pickett County Board of Commissioners, George Newman, said that a couple of different times. It's environmentalist versus environmentalist. And I knew that they were going to be sort of painted as the bad guys, the board, when I wrote this story. And I tried to put in there that, you know, they're not saying we're against people disagreeing with us. And they didn't, they in the end didn't stop Wilderness Workshop from getting their $20,000. But I think that they were certainly irked by the attitude, there, at least the perceived attitude by Wilderness Workshop of being against the trail. And Sloan from Sloan Shoemaker, the head of the Wilderness Workshop, said, no, 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 that's not the case. And, you know, I kept hearing they're not being collaborative Wilderness Workshop from the county's point of view. And Sloan said to me, well, you set up the process. Where's the collaboration? But at the same time, he told me, well, we've reached out to them and we want to sit down and explain where we're coming from. And that to me seems like collaboration. So, you know, nothing is decided about this trail.
Well, exactly. And you know, the Forest Service has to do an environmental assessment. Mm-hmm. And the one thing that you're never going to want to do from the government point of view is be pre-decisional. That's court material right there. And arbitrary and capricious. And a lot of folks have already made their mind up where they don't want that trail.
Right.
And they're not being open-minded. I've thought about writing a column in the Soper Sun about this because they're so adamant when they haven't even seen any proposal
well,
yet.
Well, and again, that's my point, that I knew they were going to jump to just sort of down the throats of the commissioners. And really, they were. I think George and both Rachel said to me later, I wasn't going to bring it up, but as long as George did, she chimed in. But you know, I just think that it was something that they wanted to talk about and kind of get off their chests and not necessarily punish Wilderness Workshop. Rachel was like, I don't even know anybody who isn't a donor to Wilderness Workshop.
Amy, so a point from you, and we'll take a break and come right back to this because there's lots more to say.
All right, there's a lot I have to say, but my question is, I mean, Rachel Richards is comparing Wilderness Workshop to Russian propagandists on Facebook. I thought that was a little extreme. But my question is, why would Pitkin County commissioners claim that Wilderness Workshop is anti-trail? I mean, what do they have to gain by that?
Well, you think there's a validity there because they don't have a reason to question that?
Well, Wilderness Workshop is not anti-trail. It's on their website. I spent some time with Will Roush this week. I've talked with Sloan, and by all accounts, they're not anti-trail. They support the idea of a trail and want an alignment that's best for wildlife. They're advocating for the wildlife. They even hired a wildlife biologist, I think his name was Rick Thompson, earlier this year to analyze where the trail would have the greatest impact on wildlife.
All right, we're going to come right back to this. Right. Wilderness Workshop and Pickin County. You're listening to Valley Roundup on Aspen Public Radio. Stay tuned.
Yeah.
Good afternoon. You're listening to Valley Roundup live on Aspen Public Radio. I'm Allison Bektesh. Joining me to put things in perspective for the week's news today are Jason Auslander of the Aspen Times, Amy Haddon Marsh of KDNK, and Bill Kite. He's a columnist with the Glenwood Post Independent. Thank you all so much for joining me. We're right in the thick of what's interesting to me is the story that you wrote, Jason, about Pickin County and Wilderness Workshop and the trail from Carbondale to Crested Butte. It's actually a story about grant making. And what happened was their kind of difference in opinion about this one specific thing came up when they were deciding whether they should give funds to a nonprofit, which is something that they do every year. Right. And a lot of the backlash in the comments I've seen to your story was, oh, so now the county's just not going to give any money to organizations that don't agree with them. And my question is, why would they give money to...
Well, I think that was their point, too. And Amy, back to your point, I think that they weren't using it to gain anything. I think that their honest view of the situation was that Wilderness Workshop was anti-trail. I mean, I heard it from the head of the open space program. You know, three of the five commissioners basically said that whole thing. So I don't think that it was an attempt to provoke in any way as much as it was to say, we think that you're treating us like your enemy, and that's what we feel like. And again, they gave them the $20,000. So I just think that they needed to get something off their chests and say that, and back to your point, Allison, that, you know, we don't want to give money to people that are going to turn it around and then bash us.
Amy?
Well, I guess I don't understand what the Pitkin County Commissioners were angry at Wilderness Workshop about. I mean, they're just not anti-trail. But in terms of the process, if the Pitkin County Commissioners were irked by the fact that Wilderness Workshop questioned or complained about the process, the decision-making process, or the public process, Wilderness Workshop was not the only group who questioned that. I mean, I spent time with Dee Malone, who's the head of the Crystal River Caucus, earlier, like in September, I think, and they wrote a letter to the Pitkin County Commissioners stating that they wanted a dialogue and not just a survey. They wanted to talk about this instead of having a couple of options to choose from or whatever. And Carbondale Town trustees were also concerned about that. I mean, John Stroud wrote about it in the PI in October. And Heather Henry, who's a Carbondale Town trustee, said that she was saying something about, and I'm paraphrasing a little, that the Pitkin County Open Space and Trails website is informative, but might not be the most transparent way to solicit public input. And most of the Carbondale trustees at the time wanted the trail, but they also wanted a fair and thorough process. So I don't know. I just felt like Pitkin County Commissioners were singling out Wilderness Workshop about that. And
well, that's my other question. Wilderness Workshop is a nonprofit in the Valley. They are not the ones building this trail. They are not the ones organizing this. They're a voice of the public, but really one of the many public comments. Why does it matter what they think?
Mm-hmm. What Wilderness Workshop thinks? Mm-hmm. Well, again, it was a conversation about the Healthy Community Fund, which comes from a property tax, and the commissioners have to sign off on all of those grants every year. So that's why it got brought up. And, you know, judging by the strength of their sort of protestations on it, I think that they were really pretty kind of upset about it and couldn't understand. I think there's a lot of misunderstanding here,
sure.
Number one, I think.
Yeah, apparently so.
Yeah, and I think that they couldn't understand why, after all these years, Wilderness Workshop's been around for 50 years, all of a sudden they're coming at the county like this. And this was the perception that they had. I'm not saying that Wilderness Workshop was doing that. And in fact, I went through Wilderness Workshop's entire Facebook feed and Twitter feed all the way back to the spring, and I saw nothing of the vitriol and anger sort of that was coming from the commissioners. So I think there's some misunderstandings here.
I should say, for full disclosure, as Jason knows from watching the meeting, both KDNK and Aspen Public Radio are also recipients of that Healthy Community Fund.
Well,
as much right. money as we want, we get from them, and I'm going to leave it at that. Amy, we have one more before we jump to other off of environmental issues in this public-private land discussion. I would love to hear your kind of summary of this Red Hill story that you've been following all week.
Well, yeah, the Red Hill Recreation Area, just north, sort of north, I guess, east of Carbondale, just across Highway 82, might be getting a different trail. I mean, the Aspen Valley Land Trust they're under contract with the current owner of that 25 acres, which starts at the entrance of 133 and Highway 82, across the highway from the bridge, and they're under contract to buy that 25 acres for about $800,000. Mm-hmm. And what they would like to do is, when they purchase that land, they want to deed it to the town of Carbondale, and then Carbondale plans to annex it and create a trail that would take people off County Road 107 to get to the Red Hill Recreation Area, whether that's Mushroom Rock or the BLM land beyond.
Okay.
And it's also to put private land into public hands, you know, sort of the reverse of the the what Bears some people were saying with the land swap.
Well, and the reason, one of the reasons for that is the safety issues. You see people,
right.
Every time I pull up to the light there to go into Glenwood, you see people and dogs and cars and trucks. And so I think that's a really good idea to get that piece of land.
Bill, you have that perspective of working for BLM as well. You know, it's that combination of let's leave it open and let's go play on it. And how do you make that call?
Well, it's a tough balance. You can't ever please everyone, but you want to take all the facts you're looking at for why you want that piece of land into consideration and if it's a good decision or not. Especially if it's a land exchange, it has to be of equal or greater value to the government in order to exchange a piece of land. So there's a lot of issues behind the scenes that people don't realize, and it's quite a complicated thing to pull off something like that. But more power to Aspen Valley Land Trust. I think
well,
it's a really good deal.
Well, it's not really a land exchange.
No, I'm just saying, no, I realize that. I'm just saying things like that sometimes that are, really they're complicated issues most of the time.
Amy, what would keep this from happening?
What would keep it from happening?
Yeah, is it just on track?
I don't know. I mean, if the contract fell through, I guess. But I think Aspen Valley Land Trust will buy it anyway. That's my understanding, because they would really, and I think a lot of people would really like to see the entrance to Carbondale remain sort of open, because, you know, that's private land, and people have been thinking about, I mean, it's zoned commercial. There was a PUD on that bottom 4 acres that was approved in the 1990s. It could be a gas station. It could be a convenience store. Storage units.
Wow.
So, I mean, you know.
That's a different face than what we currently have.
Yeah, right. It's a really different face. I think it's going to take a while in terms of building, you know, the designing and building the trail. But Aspen Valley Land Trust has the, they're in their fundraising campaign right now. But I don't think it's not going to happen. The trail might take a while, but I think that AVLT will purchase that land. That's my thinking.
All right, you're listening live to Valley Roundup on Aspen Public Radio. I'm Allison Bechtesh. Giving us the backstory today are Jason Auslander of the Aspen Times, Amy Haddon Marsh of KDNK joining us by phone, and Bill Kite is here in the studio, a columnist with the Glenwood Post-Independent. We'll be back in a moment. We're back. Thanks for tuning into Valley Roundup Live on Aspen Public Radio. We have about 5 to 6 minutes left of the show and quite a bit of news to get through still. I want to talk about tax reform some. Amy, you talked with someone who is very much working on this right now, our Congressman Scott Tipton. I'm going to actually start with a soundbite from him. You asked him how the tax overhaul would affect families or people making $100,000 or less. This is the beginning of his kind of long answer to that.
Well, first of all, right now, if you're an individual, you're able to get $6,000 tax-free under the current tax code. That doubles under the House bill to $12,000. If you're a couple, it goes from $12,000 to $24,000.
Okay, we have this doubling of kind of like the income you can pretend you didn't have, so that doesn't get taxed on. He talked about how you can all of a sudden deduct up to $10,000 of your property taxes.
In Colorado, yeah.
In Colorado. It sounded like he had a lot of good things to say about the new tax, the proposed tax overhaul.
At least for people earning less than $100,000, I mean, you know, you can change your deduction, I guess, to $12,000 if you're an individual. By all standards, he was in favor of it, and he's also in favor of drilling in the Alaska National Wildlife Refuge if it's done responsibly.
Oh,
and that, as you know, was part of, I believe it was still part of the tax bill. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Well, Jason also looked into the tax bill, especially how that would hit locally some of the county services.
Well, yeah, Rachel Richards brought up the fact that, you know, if you can't deduct property taxes, then that could affect, she said specifically, as we were talking about the Healthy Community Fund,
right,
which, you know, 70 different agencies and a major, major portion of Pitkin County Health and Human Services are funded through that property tax. And if it's not there, you know, that's hundreds of thousands of dollars that they're going to have to make up because you can't not fund the county health department. So they're going to be looking at that in terms of coming out pretty hard to get people to vote for that again, I think, next November.
So it's that balance that maybe you get some back into your own bank account, but all of a sudden you don't have those services you expect from your community.
Right. And there's a lot of property tax here, I'm guessing. You know, I mean, there's a lot of mill levies.
Absolutely. Yeah. Bill, have you been looking at the tax reform bill at all?
No, I've been trying to recover from the mill levy that didn't pass in Glenwood Springs.
Right.
So.
Well, you know, the children's health insurance was defunded federally. The CHIP program in, I think, nationwide, but in Colorado, that affects like 75,000 kids and 800 pregnant women, and it's low-cost insurance for a certain income bracket. And that was, the federal funding was denied, and the state has money for that through January, and that's it.
And I think that's another thing our reporter Wyatt Oram here at Aspen Public Radio has been on. How is this hitting the valley? That so many things get wrapped up into a tax bill. You know, what
right.
you pass it as a yes, no, all or nothing. Of course, the House and the Senate are reconciling it. But once you say yes, you mean yes to everything that's in that bill. And it includes things like stuff that refers to Dreamers and DACA that isn't exactly tax related.
Well, and the way it was done, too, is really not.
Yeah, they didn't even read it before they voted.
And it was all marked up with pencil and. Yeah, it's
Tipton
really
said that. I asked him that. I asked Scott Tipton. I shouldn't say Tipton. I asked Congressman Tipton why he voted in favor of it if it passed without a hearing. And he said, there were hearings. He said the House Ways and Means Committee had hearings on that.
Amy, I also want to come back in. Our research assistant, Kristen Kay, in the back there. You're right about drilling and the tax bill. That's still being included in there as well.
Morris, yeah. Okay. Bad.
With just a couple minutes left, I want to get as corny as possible. Jason, you're prolific this week. The stories we've already talked about, lots of crime, but then also you had kind of a weird turn for a reporter, almost an op-ed, like story time in the paper.
It was delightful.
Yeah, thanks. Well, it's a new thing that we have on the page, too, that's kind of an out and about sort of thing. And so... as you said, I've had kind of a busy week, the story really did stick with me, and I asked my editor, Dave Krause, if that was all right. He's like, yeah. He said, yeah, you know, go ahead and do it with the holidays. So I...
Can you share just a little synopsis?
Sure. Yeah, so I over the Thanksgiving holiday, my neighbors went out of town, and the reason I know that is because they left the alarm on in their bedroom. It went off every morning at 4:45.
In the morning!
Yeah, 4:45. And so, you know, I guess the point was, rather than get really upset about something that I couldn't do, I just slept in the other room and put a little note on their door saying, hey, the next time you go out of town, could you please make sure that you turn
off your
alarm?
Was it polite?
Oh, yeah, it really was.
Okay.
I said, please. I said, thank you and happy holidays. Because I wasn't particularly angry about it. I was a little annoyed, but, you know. And so then I just didn't think anything more of it. And a couple days later, the nice young couple who lives over there knocked on my door and gave me a brownie and a gift card to Cafe Inc. in town and apologized profusely. And it was just... Again, as I said in the story, that's kind of the way you handle that situation. And so.
Oh, that's so nice.
And the title, It's Nice to Be Nice. So we're going to end on that holiday cheer. It's been a pleasure having you in the studio live here at Aspen Public Radio. My guests today have been Amy Haddon Marsh of KDNK. Thank you so much for joining.
My pleasure.
Bill Kite, columnist with the Glenwood Post-Independent, and Jason Auslander of the Aspen Times.
Thanks.
You can get a rundown of links and more information online, aspenpublicradio.org. Valley Roundup is a production of Aspen Public Radio News. All things considered is up next. It's 4:00.